Hi, it's Lisa. If you've got kids and you've got career goals, you have a hard job managing both. We hear you. So on today's show, we've assembled a panel of women who've achieved the titles of vice president and mom all at the same time. How did they do it? Listen to our panel of moms talk about their experiences in the workplace and at home. You're listening to The Work-Life Equation, the Bright Horizons podcast for busy working families. Whether you're a working mom, a dad, or you're busy caring for other family members, we've got tips for how to fit jobs and families together and for how to make your work-life equation add up.
For me, I followed my passions and the work that I like to do.
This is Helen. She's a VP in human resources and a single mom of two.
But in the meantime, started a family and sort of just had to match those two things together and muddle along.
I always knew that I was going to be a mom, and I always knew that I was going to have a career.
Here's Eileen. She's the VP of communications, and she's got two children.
I worked really hard and a lot of hours doing something that I loved and had a blast doing in my 20s. And I think my career built because of what I put in there. And at that time, I wasn't thinking of how to make it happen with motherhood.
Christine is also a single mom. She has one girl and she's a marketing VP.
You know, I became a single mom pretty early on when my daughter was 6 months old. My goal really was to maintain my job and do a good job. And that's really all I wanted.
And this is Jessie.
I actually joined a company that was family friendly.
She's the VP of brand content and creative. And she has three kids, all adopted from Guatemala.
Because I knew that I wanted to start a family. So I was doing my own thing and being a writer and really loving that. But when my husband and I decided that we were going to build a family, and when we realized that it might be not quite as easy as we might have hoped, I felt like I needed to have a job with more stability.
Everyone here has accomplished a lot, yet they all sound a little surprised.
It's pretty rare that you, on a day-to-day basis, feel like you've accomplished a lot. I think, you know, I still feel the way I did 15 years ago, which is there's a lot of work to do and I've done some good stuff, but there's still a lot more ahead of me.
Well, I love what Christine said, the story around, you know, you sort of focus on what you need to focus on. You know, in your case, it was just like keeping your job, just keeping going. And that actually gives a lot of clarity. It's like, I need to understand what my priorities are. And actually people often respond to that around me. It's like, it's obvious what I'm here to do. And, you know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time doing things that don't matter. And I think that also focuses my mind in terms of our organizational objectives and how I tie into this. So for me, it hasn't hindered my career to need to also focus on my family.
But, you know, we are not a representative sample.
Yeah.
So we all are here partially because we joined a family-friendly company. We all know that it's okay to have our priorities shift back and forth between work and family at this organization. And I know that's certainly not the norm.
They all agree about one thing: where they work and what they do is a major strategy.
I think choosing the employer and working at something that you like to do and doing it and working hard at it because it's something that interests you and not because you're building a career trajectory that is going to lead you to some title or leadership position. I like what I want to do, and therefore I'm passionate about it, and therefore I want to make a difference within my organization. And that's all that I've thought about in terms of deliberately building a career.
Well, that kind of goes back to that old saying, do what you love and the money will come. The success will come too, you know.
Certainly seems to work for all of us in this room.
Beyond job and career, each of our panelists talked about very specific approaches to getting work done and being completely unapologetic about what they need to stay sane.
Organization is huge, right? You have to be organized. Like Helen said, I think doing what needs to be done, not wasting a lot of time on the fluff, because I think probably the one thing we'd all agree on is there are not enough hours in the day. But at the same time, even with this feeling of I need three of me, I think, and I don't know, I'm curious what the others think, that finding the time for yourself is really important. I know that for me, that I'm very, very deliberate about that. And I think people sometimes are surprised, but I think that helps me stay organized in the other realms because it helps me stay sane.
Yeah, that's something that Jessie definitely does well and I admire. I don't do it very well. I think my strategy is to be unapologetic. I'm unapologetic about the fact that at work, I have a family and I have family obligations. And, you know, next Wednesday, that means that at 1 o'clock, I'm leaving because I have to go to my kids' school conference and they hold the conferences between 1 and 3. And that's when it's going to be. And I'm unapologetic with my kids that sometimes I have to be doing work while they're doing doing something else. And I think for me, at least, I feel like I have to get comfortable with that. My kids have a mom who works, and there's value in that, even if it doesn't always make them happy.
But I'm curious about that. And I wonder for other people around the table, whether you all had mothers who worked, because when you say you're unapologetic about being a working mother, I think I absolutely feel that way too. And for me, it was, of course, I'm going to work. My mother worked. It would never enter my mind that I was not going to work.
My mom worked. My mom was a single mom. And it's funny comparing myself to my mom, because I look back and, you know, my mom was that mom who, you know, she was dean at a major university in Boston and a single mom. And she was still like scrubbing the kitchen floors every Saturday morning on her hands and knees. And I think on days when I think that I have it hard, I think about what her experience was like back in, you know, the 70s and 80s. And that was probably 10 times harder.
One of the things I've learned is that every year, it seems to me, the years seem to really mark a change in what's needed in terms of me as a mom. And
yeah.
So not to get too comfortable or too excited about one set of structures that works, because it's all going to change. And so, you know, just like literally taking it year by year and finding out what's needed right now for me.
Yeah, I'm now going to have an interesting conversation with somebody recently about the idea of building your network for family responsibilities. But it kind of sounds like based on that, you should really be building an internal network, professional support network.
Yeah, but I do think that they go hand in hand, because I tend to be incredibly private and it is not comfortable for me to talk about personal things at the workplace. So, for example, for all these years when we were trying to adopt a child, I didn't tell anybody in the workplace. And then
except
I finally
for me.
Told you know, and I have realized as I've gotten older that the more you talk about your personal things at work, the more people can relate to you, can offer support for you, can feel connected to you. And so I've really shifted as I've gotten more senior, as I've gotten both age-wise and also in terms of my career. And I talk about almost deliberately things that are going on at home much more than I ever did when I was more junior.
What about the people who report to them? Well, careers don't occur in a vacuum, and all of our panelists were extremely aware of the impact their approaches had, not just on their own successes, but on the next generations too.
You know, I think that's really important for us to model too, particularly as women. I think about Mary Lou, who's our COO, and how comfortably she talks about her challenges as a working mom. I think it creates a really nice model, and I think about how that, we need to think about that translating from us to our team members and the people that we lead.
That is funny. You think about this whole model of authentic leadership, and just there's something really lovely about aging and just getting more and more comfortable with yourself. You know, when you talk about honesty or transparency or being unapologetic, I think they do kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Is that comfort with yourself as a leader and as a person? And this work-life dichotomy. I'm not really, I think you have one life and it's kind of how you choose to spend it, and you are who you are at home and at work. So you need to rename that.
Absolutely.
Yes. You know, I want to go back to something, because in terms of helping people balance work and life, or whatever you want to call it. I mean, you two didn't really talk about the unapologetic things.
I
think those are really important.
I completely agree with that. You know, I am relatively newer to Bright Horizons. I've been here for 4 years, and I had a job for 15 years before that. And every time I got a new boss, or every time I moved roles, or every time I get a new staff member, that is the conversation I have, which is like, here's who I am, here's my life, here's what it means for you. I get in at this hour, I leave at this hour, here's the best way to contact me. And so I really believe in kind of having those conversations almost aggressively up front. I remember when I was interviewing for this job, having the conversation 3 or 4 times with the person who's going to be my boss, saying, are you sure you really understand what this is going to mean for you? And finally, he was like, will you stop trying to talk yourself out of this job? He's like, I get it. But I think having those conversations proactively and directly helps me feel less conflicted when I need to take advantage of the flexibility that I hope to earn. And I don't know if it's good or bad, but I've always been willing to accept that my approach to work might not work for everyone.
But I love what you just said a minute ago, which was by saying, this is me, that removes all the guilt, because you've laid it out. This is me. Yeah, I think everyone should do that.
It's interesting, because I'm thinking about what Christine just said about the schedule. I mean, one of the things I'm sensitive to is my team members, other team members who maybe don't have a family, but have other lives, like everybody does, have other big lives. And I work in HR as well, so we want to make sure that we have equity in some regards in terms of how we treat people. And so I'm not sure the answer to this yet, but I never want someone to think that I'm getting special flexibility because I'm at a more senior level. And it's actually sometimes true. At a more senior level, you do have more flexibility, whatever.
You have more control over your work schedule too, I think.
Right. But it's a constant dance, how to make sure that I'm also supporting them in the way they need. So it's not just having a conversation with my manager, but also having a conversation with my team that says, I'm available, you can reach me these ways. So, I mean, I think a lot of what we're saying also is that it's kind of messy and that, you know, we have to be very deliberate about it and keep thinking about what do I need? What's important to me? What are my priorities right now? And, you know, and be transparent, not only with our bosses, but also with the people who work for us.
One of the conversations that continues to come up for women is about compromises and fitting everything in and the exhausting conversation about having it all. Here's what they had to say about that.
I think life is a constant compromise. And quite frankly, I think that that's true. Whether you're a stay-at-home parent or you're working and you don't have kids or your life is something else, I think the notion of can you have it all, when the world is all, everybody's making choices all the time. And do I do this thing for my kids and skip this conference at work that I would have had to travel for? Do I fit in this dress and not eat that piece of cake? I mean, you know, it is everything.
But you said something so interesting to me probably years ago that I still remember, that men have to make the same choices. They're just socialized to deal with them better.
Well, they're socialized to choose work too.
Well, how do we help women? You know, you guys have made some great inroads. How do we help other women be socialized to feel okay with those choices?
That's a tough question.
Yeah. I think there's a lot we can do to support each other for sure. I mean, again, we've talked about the network and sort of, you know, constantly reinforcing. I mean, it's hard not to get competitive with other moms or with other colleagues who seem to be doing it better. And so, you know, I certainly try to make a conscious effort to sort of build up my colleagues, support them, and, you know, drop anything to support a mom in need for sure. But I think that when I think about strategies as well, for me, it's also, so I choose to pay someone to clean my house, but I don't choose to pay someone to cut my lawn because I actually enjoy doing that. So I, again, make really intentional decisions around what are the things I don't love doing, and I make, you know, make those choices.
Yeah, it's funny. Early on, I mean, I think I talked earlier about focusing on building a team at work, and it took me a lot longer to figure out how to build my team at home. Because I found that I was spending every weekend just swimming in life maintenance, which, you know, especially if you're a single mom, like all the housework falls to you, all the repair work falls to you. And so it took me a long time to figure out what was I willing to outsource, even if it meant, you know, paying more money than I wanted to, just to have that time that Jesse's talking about. And and that time is super valuable. And it is, you know, my personal time is worth something. So, you know,
yeah.
And I've gone through periods of time where if work is really crazy, I will double up on my home team. You know, I've paid the babysitter to help me pack when I needed to move. I've paid someone to go get my dog license for me. Just little things like a neighborhood kid to run down to the town hall to do stuff like that, that I just can't get to.
Somebody gave me this advice years ago and we've done it, and and I know that not every scenario lends itself to this, especially, you know, we have two single moms in the group, and so it's not quite so easy, but this has made such a world of difference, and it seems like a small thing, which is every week I have one night, Thursday night, which is my night, and in my case, my husband is able to be on point at home, and Tuesday night is his night, and perhaps if you're a single mom, there's somebody else who can step up on that night. But knowing that I have my Thursday nights, when I was talking earlier about having time for myself, makes such a world of difference, whether that's being able to do an exercise class or being able to catch up with a friend, which I normally, because in my life, and we didn't mention it before, but I have a daughter with very, very severe medical needs. So there's no free time if I don't deliberately make it. When I'm home, I literally am in the same room as my daughter all the time. I can't go to the bathroom without her with me. So I have to be deliberate about scheduling that time. But this couple who gave us this idea was two working parents. They had one child and they were still finding it really difficult to have time for themselves. And so they gave each other the gift of one night a week. And it's been about 3 years now. And I recommend this to anybody if you're able to do it, to have a night, one night a week that you know is yours. And there is nothing. I mean, it's like a sacrosanct night for both me and for my husband, and it really makes a big difference.
When I was a stay-at-home mom, I actually had somebody I would freelance one day a week, and I had childcare that one day a week when my kids were really little. The point was, I was a better mom 6 days a week than I was 7.
One thing that's always been a priority for me, because I like to cook, and maybe that's kind of part of my downtime, is making dinner every night. So I'm a big believer in like a homemade dinner every night. We have dinner, we clean up, and then my daughter starts to do her homework and I open my computer back up and we sit at the same table and we're kind of each doing our own version of homework, but in a way we're doing it together.
Guilt is so often a part of the working mom experience, but it shouldn't be. Our panelists talked not just about the influence of their own working mothers, but the positive effects of their careers on their own kids.
A couple weeks ago, she came in to work with me for a couple hours. And on the way home, she said, "I'm so impressed by you, Mom." And I wasn't doing anything, you know, it wasn't like I was giving a big speech or anything. And I said, "Oh yeah, why?" And she said, "I can tell you're really good at your job." And I was like, "How can you tell that?" And she's like, "I don't know. I can just tell by how into it you are." But I think just modeling that, it made me feel really good about the choices that I've made, even though, you know, any given choice I might feel torn about, I think the sum of the choices is feels to me like it's setting a good example for her.
It's so funny to think about our kids' view of our work, because yeah. We were watching Moana the other night and there's a scene where Moana is slashing the little coconut creatures and she's slashing them all out of her way. And my little 11-year-old said to me, "That's like you at work, Mom." I said, "What in the world are you talking about?" I said, "The coconuts are your work and you're just slashing them out of the way." There you have it. Well, I also ask my kids if they want to, quote unquote, help with my work, because I think, you know, we're all talking about flexibility at the workplace, but I think part of the reason or part of the way we take advantage of that flexibility is by knowing that we're going to be logging on later on at night. I mean, for me, I would much rather leave work at a decent hour to have that time with my kids, but I'm absolutely going to be, you know, plugged in virtually every night after they go to sleep. But even if it's, you know, when they're still awake and I have some work to do them, I'll ask if they want to help and show them, you know, so they can see the photographs or the videos or whatever it is and just involve them in it, so that growing up with a working mother for them is not a negative. It's something that we all do, you know, we're all participating in the work to a certain extent.
I think the teaching them as well, the fact that we all love our jobs, right? It seems to come across. Mm-hmm. I think that that's a wonderful message for our children too, that they can find work that they really love.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these messages we're sending them are going to last for a lifetime, that you should find a job that you love. And if you find a job that you love, it makes it easier to do it. And as my daughters are getting older, I think they see that. And I'm happy that they see that I enjoy my job.
I think it's really nice for most of us, we had our kids in a Bright Horizon Center when they were little. And, you know, for my kids' first 5 years of their lives, I was bringing them with me to work. And they know what my work is because they were part of it too. And they associate that and they have an affection for Bright Horizons. The idea that, you know, bringing your kids with you every day, they know that you work and they know your workplace and they have an identity with it. It was always nice for me and still is.
One thing everyone agreed on is that nobody does it alone. And everyone on our panel said they were very deliberate about assembling not just a team, but one that fit their work mother lives.
One of the other things that I think made my career progression when my daughter was very young possible was that I had a really good and reliable team that cared for my daughter. You know, I didn't have to worry at all. Like, I dropped her off early if I was running late. They understood. It was not an issue. And it really freed me up to, when I was at work, I was thinking about work and I didn't have like six other things going on in the back of my head. I often credit that team with helping me.
I noticed that most when my daughter started school, and I realized that the after school program, as good as it was, wasn't as attuned to working parents. And there were all these things, like the way that we filled in all of our forms every year, that were like really just seemed to assume that I had way more time than I actually did. And so I think, you know, finding your support system that is really attuned to working parents is also a strategy that, again, is somewhat unconscious, I think, but then you come up against it when you find people who don't understand that you can't make cupcakes or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, a cupcake thing.
It was a big thing for me. I don't have a single relative who is either local enough or able enough to be part of my support network.
Me neither.
So having that system, it was the child care center when my kids were young, and insanely fortunate, I think, with our after school programs from both of my kids' schools that are actually at the school, so there's no transportation issue. But I think you have to have a system. In some ways, I actually think having a non-familial support network can have its upsides because it does not come with the emotional obligations and favor trading that sometimes a family situation
easier to be
can.
Unapologetic.
Yeah. No guilt.
But I do think that it's important for people to know that it can work when family is not part of that situation, because I know for so many people that's really a struggle.
So I don't have that, and I think that if you can't make it work, so again, in our situation, which is, you know, pretty unusual, that's where the stress comes in, because you, so I see both sides. I see how great it is, for example, when I had my three kids in Bright Horizon Centers, to have that reliability and to know that nobody's calling out sick. I mean, somebody calls out sick, it's not going to impact you. They will find a caregiver to step in. And now I see the other side, because if I have a caregiver call out, then I can't come into work. And I see how tough that is. And that, you know, I'm sure for a lot of people who are listening to this, that is their reality.
Yeah.
But the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, I think we make it sound like, oh, you know, I figured it out and I'm making it really easy. And but I do think that there are things for sure that you have to give up. There is absolutely no way that you can be everything you want to be in the workplace and everything you might ascribed to be in the personal life. And my example on this is when my first child was in public school, and they were talking about a room mother, and I thought, that's really cool. I'm going to be the room mother. And I called my best friend, who's a stay-at-home mom, who has been the room mother at her kid's school. And I said, what do you think? I think I'm going to sign up to be the room mother. And she said, absolutely not. There is no way you can be the room mother. And I was like, what are you talking about? I'd be such a good room mother. And she was like, no, you cannot be the room mother. Just trust me. And so I've never been a room mother. Now, maybe I would hate it, but apparently you need to have a lot of extra time.
And I was a room mother. You were.
Yeah, we both were the first year we both moved to the same school district, and then I haven't done it since.
You were a very good room mother.
I don't mean chaperone.
Yeah,
right. I also think it's something that Eileen said earlier about this idea of having it all. Like, to me, feels like a very outdated notion. You know, like when we were growing up, there was a food pyramid, and the idea was, you know, at every meal you had to have a green and a meat and a vegetable. And now the latest thinking is, as long as you get most of what you need in a period of time, that's what's healthy. And I kind of think the same thing about having it all is, you can have pieces of it, you know, you can have pieces of anything, but it's pretty rare that on any given day you feel like you have excelled at work and you have excelled at life. And I think sometimes we have to be happy with, I had a great day at work and I'm doing the best I can at home, or vice versa.
Are you in the trenches of building your family and your career? It might seem hard, but maybe it's motivating to hear these moms tell their story and to hear how they've made it possible to achieve higher levels in their careers. If you like what you heard today, get more of our podcast by subscribing. While you're downloading, let us know what you thought, or give us a share. Thanks to everyone for being here. We look forward to seeing you next time as we help make the work-life equation add up.